final installment in the Toldos section of the of our discussion of the Avni Nezer, the life of the Avni Nezer. And as much as I enjoy talking about the tzaddikim, but I know that it's difficult to sit and just to listen to that. But I feel that it's very important. Also, whenever you're talking about tzaddikim from the Beis Medrash of Pshisk and Kotsk, you're not going to have the real wild, fascinating stories of Moifsim and miracles, because in Kotsk and it's well known that in Kotsk and Ger, Sachachov, they didn't think highly of miracles. They didn't think highly, only if Hashem does them directly for Klal Yisrael. But as far as it being the Avodah of the Tzaddikim, that really wasn't something that was popular. He used to say the Kotzka Osos Omovsim Badmas Venecha. He said that's not for us. That Osos Omovsim are not for us. So the story is a story of an Adam Gadol that we've been talking about, the person who changed the style of learning. A person who brought the glory of Talmud Torah back to Chassidus, back to the Chassidim at a time when it could have gone in a different direction. He brought back the supremacy of learning. And we were talking, we were up to last week, and I think that there shouldn't be any problem finishing. We might even be able to start a piece of firm from the Avni Nezer's Torahs. We were up to last week the death of his Rebbe, the Kotzker, also his father-in-law. That's his father-in-law, and the Avni Nezer was 20 years old at the time. This, to get the historical perspective, we're talking about the year 1859. That's when the Kotzker was nifter, and we saw the greatness of the Avni Nezer. Was that he never would, although he was looked up to even at the age of 20 as being one of the Gaonim in all of Europe, nevertheless he would not remain without a Rebbe, without going to a Tzaddik, and he accepted upon himself the Chiddush Arim, the Ger Rebbe, at that time. But it wasn't long after that when the Chiddush Arim was Nifter, and after the Chiddush Arim was Nifter, he immediately went and he sought the tzaddik, Rabbi Hanichel from Alexander, and he became a chassid of Alexander. By this time, the Adonezer, they said after the Kotzker passed away, the Rebbetzin really couldn't support the family, and the Adonezer didn't want to accept from the Hasidim. So the Adonezer took a position. He was a rav at this time, and he was already well known as a posek, and had already written many tshuvas in his svarim. There are things that were written from the time that he was 16, 17 years old. But he did become a chassid of the Rebbe from Alexander. It happened that on Rosh Hashanah in the year Tov Reish Lamed, when Rebbe Hanichel from Alexander, who was also one of the great Talmidim of Kotsk, and now Alexander is not large, but in Europe, the Hitler and Machshmo did a very, very big job in them. But Alexander, before World War II, was tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Hasidim in Poland. Alexander and Ger, and then in Galicia, Belz, these are the largest groups of Hasidim. In White Russia was Chabad, but these are the largest groups. Alexander and Ger were hundreds of thousands of Jews. Were Chassidim of Alexander and Ger. So Rebbe Hanichel that year wasn't sick. He was not sick for Rosh Hashanah, despite the fact that the Rebbe from Alexander was well. The Shemi Shmuel, that means the Avni Nezer's son, noticed that his father, by Rosh Hashanah davening, was krechsing a lot and wasn't besimcha. And he saw that the Shemi Shmuel asked his father if anything was wrong. He saw this as a bad omen. Nevertheless, the Avni Nezer didn't answer. And on Shabbos Shuva, we know that the Avni Nezer was in Alexander for Shabbos Shuva, and when it came to Maftir, the custom in Alexander, by most of the tzaddikim, the custom was to call up the Rebbe for Maftir. So when they went to the Rebbe from Alexander to call him up to be for Maftir, he said no. He asked him to please call up the Avni Nezer, and everybody saw that also was a very bad sign. That something was wrong, and also was a sign that there were perhaps intentions on the part of the Rebbe from Alexander that somehow, after he would leave this world, that the Avni Nezer would take over. So sure enough, it was that year on Yud Ches Adar Sheni that Rebbe Hanichel from Alexander passed away. When the news arrived, where the Avni Nezer was rav is in a city called Krushnevitz. When the news arrived, so the Shemi Shmuel said, his son, we have this from his son, who said that that Ezra began right away to run from the house, and he didn't wait for the Agola, for the wagon, and the wagon had to catch up with him. He was running to get to Alexander for the Levaya. And his son said that he arrived in Alexander when the Levaya was ready, the funeral was already taking place, and the Adonizer, although he was a very weak and sick person, even as a young man, he jumped over the wall, he was climbing over the wall, and he ran and he was screaming and crying, and he threw himself on the grave of the Rebbe from Alexander. And after three months after the death of the Rebbe from Alexander, 3 months later, a group of Hasidim, of the Hasidim of Rav Henoch from Alexander, most of the Hasidim of the Rebbe from Alexander went, of course, to the family, to Alexander, who were great tzaddikim. But there was a significant contingency that approached the Avnei Nezer when he was in Krosnovitz, and he asked him to be the Admor, to be the Rebbe, not of Alexander, but to start a new chotzer, a new court. And the Avnei Nezer at that time said the following words: "My mechut mechutoni hakodesh, our Rebbe Mikotsk, my heliga shver, my father-in-law, the Kotzke said that Seifel Shal David. In the end, I'm going to have to historically as Rebbe Shal Chassidim. In the end, I'm doomed to be a Rebbe of Chassidim." He says, "Aval chashavti shehamayid yirchak admoy. I thought I would be much older when it happened to me." But he saw that min hashamayim and different things that had happened in Alexander, he saw that it was time for him to become Rebbe. And when he accepted to become Rebbe, it had an enormous impact throughout Poland. And Stieblach, at that time they were called Krosnowitzer Chassidim. Little Stieblach, the way it used to work in Poland, for those of you that might not be familiar with how it was, when there was the Ger Rebbe. The Ger Rebbe was in Ger. Ger was a shtetl, it was a small shtetl outside of Warsaw. but they used to have Ger Stieblach in almost every city in Poland where there were Jews. There was a Stiebel, there was a Ger Stiebel. And you had an Alexander Stiebel. Just like in Hungary, you had a Vizhitzer Stiebel. And you had a Kosovo Stiebel, the different Stiebelach and all the differences. So even though the Rebbe was in one place, so Stiebelach began to spring up all over Poland of Krosnowitz and Chassidim. These were the Chassidim of the Avnei Nezer. Immediately the Rebbe made it very clear. Now he's the Rebbe. Immediately the Avnei Nezer made it clear that someone who is not a masmid, any man who is not a masmid in Torah, who is not someone who sits and learns Torah, who is not conversant in Torah, shouldn't even bother approaching him. Number one. Number two, he said that the only way he would agree to be Rebbe, if he can continue to be the Rosh Hashiva, if he could continue to function in that role of being Rosh Hashiva, to say his shiurim, and that no matter what, he's not going to be bothered by people coming with problems, with tritlif, whatever, he's going to have the shiurim, he's going to run the yeshiva, he's primarily a Rosh Hashiva. That was a condition that he made, and he stuck to it for most of the years until the very very end of his life. He pretty much that's the life that he led, mostly as a Rosh Hashiva. And as I said last week, and I'm going to speak about it again in a few minutes, but on Shabbos he was Mamash Rebbe. On Shabbos he was transformed into a real Chassidish Rebbe. But during the week, the Avnei Nezer generally functioned like a Rosh Hashiva. We know that from what his son tells us that he generally didn't sleep for more than 45 minutes every 24 hours. That was his schedule. 45 minutes, he gave shiurim through the night. He had different shiurim with different groups of chassidim throughout the night. The morning was all different shiurim. It was only 45 minutes. And the Shem Rishmul said that only when he was very weak he would do that in one shot. Generally he used to divide that into two parts, the 45 minutes, not to take it all in one shot. And that was until the time he was around 70 years old. His way in davening, some of the anhogas of the Avnei Nezer, in davening one couldn't hear a sound from him. That's what he received from the Kotzke. He was very quiet by davening, and he didn't move. But they say that after the tefillah, his son said that after each tefillah he would have to change completely his clothing from head to toe. It was totally drenched with the avodah. With the intensity of his avodah. When he did see people, when he did speak to chassidim, then he took it. Those that were accepted by him, you had to be accepted. Those that were accepted by him as a chassid, as being one of his chassidim, and it wasn't easy to be accepted. He took a complete and total interest in their lives, in every single aspect of their learning, and of the marriages and everything, every single aspect of their lives, he became completely involved. And also the tzaddikim said that the Avnei Nezer, when a chassid would come in, so the Avnei Nezer would sit him next to him, and the Avnei Nezer would take his hand in both of his hands, and the yoda kol talumus libo, that the moment that he would hold your hand with both hands, he would know everything, mamish, everything that was in your heart, and he would say over your whole life, and he would give you hadrocha based upon the sharish of your neshama. But that was the way that he used to speak to people. I mean, only men, obviously. That he would hold them in both hands, and then he would know the he had the ruach hakodesh there was awesome. In 1883, he became rav in Sochachov. It's important to remember because he wasn't just a rebbe that lived in Sochachov. Wherever he went, he was the rav of that city. And he saw himself, again, mostly as being a posek and being the Rav. And the Chassidish Rebbe was something he used to krechts about, that he had no choice. But in 1883, he became the Rav there. And he refused to, he didn't accept money with Kritluch. That's why he took the position of Rabbanis. And he was there in Sochachov, he was there, Rav and Rosh Hashiva and the Rebbe for 30 years. In Chassidus, in his teaching of Chassidus, he basically single-handedly revived the Maharal. He revived the Maharal, even though the Maharal, Kiddu, was already, the Kotzker would quote often from the Maharal, and the Chiddush HaRim was also very much attached to the Maharal, and much of the writings of the Baal Tanya are also drawn from the writings of the Maharal, but it was in Sochachov that the Maharal became the Rebbe of the Chassidim. That the Maharal is looked upon as being the shorish or the ovis of Chassidus. Of course, the Maharal himself wasn't from the Chassidim; it was before Chassidus. But in terms of the huge hashpa that his teachings had, that for the most part the Maharal's teachings were really very rarely looked at before the arrival of the Talmidei Baal Shem Tov, and specifically the Sochachov. All of the years that he was Rebbe, until maybe the last year or two, there was a very small oilam. It wasn't a big oilam. Same thing by his son, by the Shemi Shmuel, and by the grandson of Dovel, and by Rav Hanachu. It was a very small oilam. And the reason was because he was so demanding in terms of where you had to be holding and learning. If a person wasn't somebody that was a genius in learning, he refused to take the person as one of the chassidim. So there were many people used to come and go, and they had shtibloch, but in terms of being close to the Avnei Nezer, it was a very small group of people. As I said, questions were being sent to him from all throughout Europe, and he began to work on his shels and shuvas, Avnei Nezer, that are some of the most famous shels and shuvas that were ever written. The shuvas of the Avnei Nezer themselves were actually organized and edited and prepared by his son, the great Shemi Shmuel. He was the one that took care of the Avnei Nezer, the Chuvas. He put them together, and he also put together the Egle Tal. The Sefer Avnei Nezer, if you would have, we have it here, the Avnei Nezer. And if you have it at home, if you take a look here, if you really want to have an oinig, a real oinig, a very, very deep delight in learning, it's one of the most wonderful mizugim. It's such a beautiful blend between real lomdis and charifis, very, very sharp lomdis, and at the same time, he had a tremendous koach of hara, psak halacha, to come down mamish to the din, and that's something that he's famous for. In his tshuvas, I just want to mention that in his tshuvas, you see something of his personality come out. In his tshuvas, you see on the one hand tremendous tekifus, a tremendous confidence in his psak. Tremendous confidence in his knowledge of Torah, and a strength in his psak. On the other hand, his humility. Let me read to you from the Eben Ezra Kuf Chav Beis. This is what he writes in one of his tshuvas. He writes to the person who wrote him. But apparently, the Avnei Nezer had written a tshuva to another rav, and the rav sent back some questions on the Avnei Nezer's tshuva. So the Avnei Nezer responded with the following words: "V'hinni mechuyev lahodiyo. I must tell you." Lo kimis yair chalila. I'm not saying this to brag or to show off. Ki dvarai tzarech ledaktik behem heitev. You must study my words much more carefully. You must be more careful. Ve'echad min ha'ga'onim ha'mufursamim shabim dinaseinu kosav elai ki tamid hu ma'ayim bedvarai kamoshu ma'ayim bedivrei harishonim zal. And one of the great leaders of this generation, has written to me that when I send him a tshuva, when I write him an halacha, he studies my tshuvas the same way that one would be medaktik in the writings of the Rishonim. The other Nezah says about himself. And then he says, if you would have studied what I wrote to you a little bit more carefully, you would have greatly benefited. But unfortunately, you didn't look into what I wrote properly. On the other hand, in Aruch Chaim Siman Pei, when if somebody had referred to one of the writings of the Rebbe, to one of his writings, that it seemed as if he was saying that he held like the Meiri, that he passing like the Meiri, so the Amnei Ezra wrote back, "Va'ani lo ish devarim ani lahachriya ben harishonim." Who am I? I don't come to be machriya. I'm not picking which Rishon is better than another Rishon. I don't do that. You know, that's not. Don't say that I was passing like the Meiri over some other Rishon. That's not how I. I'm not one that I'm able to be machriya amongst Rishonim. Now, the fame of the Avnei Nezer in learning actually was a tremendous type of the Chassidim. Besides the fact that so much Torah was being spread, it was a tremendous type because it really helped the reputation of the Chassidim in Lithuania with the Litvisha Yidden. Reb Chaim Brisker couldn't stop praising the Avnei Nezer. They only met actually. It seems they met once. They met when Avnezer was already very old. But Reb Chaim Brisker had read, of course, letters and had read tshuvas from the Avnezer. And we have a first-hand report from the Rosh Hashiva of the Mir Yeshiva, Reb Lez Yudel Finkel. Reb Lez Yudel Finkel wrote that he heard the Reb Chaim Brisker said about the Avnezer, that he is able to unearth the deepest depths with the breath of his wisdom. And he is able to reach the deepest truth of Torah. Now you understand that Reb Chaim Brisker, if you know a little bit about how it was with the Reb Chaim Brisker, he was never ever one to exaggerate. And you don't find Reb Chaim Brisker's haskamas, you know, written Hagoyin Hatzadikness. That he said about the Avnei Nezer such a thing that he's makaven la mitel shatar, that his answers in halacha are the deepest truth of Torah. That was considered to be the ultimate praise coming from the Litvisha Welt. Now, Reb Lez Yehuda Finkel wrote that he himself went to Sachet Shav to get a bracha from the Avnei Nezer. Now, which also at that time was something which is quite unusual. He went to Sachet Shav to get a bracha from the Avnei Nezer, and he refused. They always asked him what the bracha was and what happened, and all the years he refused to reveal this. He just, Reb Lez Yehuda Finkel, the Mir Rosh Yeshiva, said, at the end of his life, he said that he sees that the brachas of the Avnei Nezer came true. But he didn't say what the brachas were, but he said that the brachas of the Nezer came true. The last 5 years of the Avnei Nezer's life, he was very, very sick. He was terribly sick, and because of that, he had to stop giving his regular shiur. And that's really when his schedule was changed. Only the final 5 years of his life is when he stopped giving the regular shiurim. So instead, he would learn with the Talmidim the Erech between 8 and 10 hours a day. He used to learn with the people, with the Chassidim, with the different groups. But instead of going 20 hours or whatever, he would, in shifts, such long shifts, he would have to go to you know, that they had certain towns in Poland where they were resort towns. There was a hot springs near, you know, Svost, not far from Varsha, and he used to go there. And there was a mile to that too. It's because over there, he was able to meet with a lot of gedolim, and there are a lot of very fascinating stories that come out from the meetings that took place in Marienbad and other places, where the tzaddikim from Litva and from Germany and from Poland and Hungary would join together, and it was a wonderful step towards bringing Klal Yisrael together. So it was during this time that he began to work on the Eglei Tal, and the Shem Yishmul began to edit it, to put it together. Now, as I said, the last few years of his life, he began to accept many more people to come into him. Whereas, what Avnei Nezer said is that in the earlier part of my life, I saw that my tachlis was just to learn with Yidden, just to learn with Jews. But now that I'm so sick and that it's hard for me to concentrate that much, so other. He didn't go and retire, you know, and play golf the rest of his life. So he said, "Adarab, and now, you know, it's my time is now left for Klal Yisrael to devote my energy to Klal Yisrael." And we have an interesting st- statement from him, though, that from the beginning of that period when his health was really was waning, he said the following: I agreed originally to become a Rebbe because I believed at that time that a few hundred great Talmid Chacham would come to me, and I would have a strong connection with them in learning. If it would have been this way, they would have had a great benefit from being my Chassidim. Beruch Nisha Begashmias, in spiritual things and in physical things. Unfortunately, you know the way it is by the Chassidim, that they go around exaggerating about their Rebbe. So he says, unfortunately, I had these Chassidim of mine, that they went around already in Poland, they started saying things about me. He says, and because of this, all kinds of simple people have come to me, looking for miracles. Afilu bali malachis, even working people, even balabatim have come here to me. She'ein li shaychus imohem klal. I don't know what shaychus I have to these people. Vayekoshali ma'od lishmo devrayim. This is his words. The Shem Yishmol took this down. He said it was very, very hard for me to even listen to them. Ubakashosim, and to hear their requests. You know, like, Rebbe, I need a new cow, or my horse's leg is broken. He says, I couldn't even hear all, I couldn't listen to these things. He says, I didn't know what to do with them. I couldn't throw them away. It's Rachmanis on them. So I couldn't get rid of them. He says, what these simple Jews wanted mostly was to, where they wanted Rafu and Yeshua, that's what they came for. And it caused me tremendous bitl. It caused me to be very, very much diminished as a result of this. They all, his Zahirak Bagashim, his Panos, Rufu, Vachulu, Vizelo, Devakal. He says, that's not a simple thing. Upamachas says, Kibalti telegram, Mivarsha. He says, once I received a telegram from Warsaw, Sha'avrach Talmud Chochem Shani Makir, who Chayla Masuka, that a certain young man who's a great Talmud Chochem was very ill. Lahayli Eitza Avuro, and I had no Eitza for him. I saw that I had no choice. I had to close my sefer, and I had to say a few kapitlach to Tehillim. Even the picture, like, he wasn't into that. He said, I had no choice. He was a big Talmud Chacham, so I had no choice. So I went and I said a few v'yadaiti take of shi'asraf, and I knew that immediately when I would say Tehillim, he would be healed. V'chein hayah, and so it was. Aval anoshim pshutim she'ein lahem shaychus elai. But to simple Jews, who I don't really have any connection, it's very hard for me to bring them a Yeshua. It's very hard for me to give them health and parnasa and to daven for them. It's very hard. Not that he didn't try. Else he said, when is a big Talmud Chacham someone I learned together with, and I had a real shaychus to on a level of, on a real level of ruach and neshama. So for that, like this Talmud Chacham in Warsaw, so the second he called me, I read some Tehillim and I knew he'd be fine. That was it. I was able to lift them up right away because we had that kesher in learning. But the Hamaynam, the Yidna, come to me, says, it's very hard for me to bring them a Yeshua. Kinitzrach li levat latzmi lahem, because I have to mamish make myself a shmata. I have to mavatl myself. I have to completely, completely diminish myself to listen to all these things to bring them a Yeshua. Nevertheless, he did. And that says a lot about his mesivus nefesh. That says a lot about how does he stroll. In the usual way, of course, it means, with crafting and complaining on a certain level. But at the same time, bringing tremendous, tremendous issues to people. As I said, all of this was the 6 days of the week. Shabbos and Avnei in Sochot Shabbos, by the way, all the Torahs that we have are from Shabbos. Shabbos and Sochot Shabbos, he feared Mamish Tish, he feared the table with the Chassidim. Late into the night, Friday night came out. The whole night was with nigunim and with Torahs through the night, and then Shabbos against Shalosudas and Malava Malka, everything in the most beautiful way. And he was Torahish also with small groups of Chassidim, Sisrei Torah. They learned with them secrets, in Kabbalah and Yonim and Torah, and very, very deep level. In the derech of the Chassidus of Kotz, Ger, and Alexander. A combination, the Chassidus was a combination of goyness, of brilliance, and of avoda and serving Hashem. By the way, I just came out actually yesterday. Came to this for the first time. The Pnei Menachem. I don't know if you heard that the Lezger Rebbe, who tragically died a few months ago, Reb Pinchas Menachem, they just came out with the first chelik of his Sefer Pnei Menachem, Vayikra, which is the continuation of the Mesorah of Kotzken, of Ger. It's the most recent, authentic addition to this tremendous excitement. I mean, this from store, they came in, he's already hundreds, they're selling by hundreds, manish, the Pnei Menachem, from the Lezger Rebbe, where you see real authentic Pailu Shechsidus, and he was the Ben Zakunim of the Imre Amis, of the Ger Rebbe, of the old Ger Rebbe from Poland, the Ben Zakunim. Pnei Menachem. When he was approaching 70 years old, and he was already too sick really to sit all day and learn, so then he became very involved. What he saw as being the mitzvah of the times, and this caused some of the tzaddikim and hungry to be upset with him. The Adonezer devoted himself almost entirely to the union of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, raising money to send to Eretz Yisrael, and to build the Yeshuv in Eretz Yisrael, and to send Chassidim to Eretz Yisrael. He was violently opposed to political Zionism, along with most of the tzaddikim of the time. He was very, very much opposed to Zionism, and he spoke out very strongly against Herzl and against all of the leaders of Zionism, and he refused to participate in any of the political gatherings and so on. But despite that, he himself sent huge amounts of money to buy land from the Arabs. He was buying land all over. He would buy out land from the Arabs and to give the land away to poor Jews. He was buying out, and he raised fortunes of money comparative for those days to buy land from the Arabs. In the year 1908, even though it was just a short time before he died, he schlepped himself to Vilna. There was the Reb Chaim Oizer, who was the Gadol Hador in the Lithuanian world. Reb Chaim Oizer had called for a meeting of all the, they tried to bring together Gedolim from Litva and from Poland and Russia, to bring together the Gedolim. This was actually, eventually, ultimately, it was going to lead to the formation of the Agudas Yisrael, but at this point it wasn't yet the Agudas Yisrael. And before it would become Agudas Yisrael, there would be different splits and so on. But this was the beginning of that, and even though it was very, very difficult for him, he went to Vilna, and he was given tremendous, tremendous covet over there. Reb Chaim Oizer said at that meeting, his Asafnu Ayom Yachta Baosa Vilna Shesimla Baavaris Apirud Vahapilud Ben Chesidim L'Mesnagdim. Reb Chaim Oizer said, we are symbolically gathered today in the city of Vilna that always has symbolized the separation, the division between the Chassidim and the Misnagim. Lalame, to teach everybody, to teach the whole world, Sha'ein od b'yameinu period levavos kazeh, that there no longer remains a period levavos, that we're no longer separated. That is the time when the Avnei Nezer actually met the Chofetz Chaim, and the Avnei Nezer met the greatest leaders at that time who were present were actually the Avnei Nezer from Poland, and the Chofetz Chaim, Reb Chaim Brisker, and the Rashab, Reb Sholem Ber of Lubavitch, was from Russia, from White Russia, and at that time they were able to spend many, many, many hours together talking and learning in different inyanim. It was a very important thing. Again, it really raised the covet of the Chassidim in the eyes of the Lutfische to have the Avnei Nezer there. At that time, his wife, it was around that time that his wife Saratzina died. He was very, very deep into Avelus. The mourning was very strong over the death. It wasn't only because he missed his Rebbetzin, which of course was the case. They were married for many years. But he said at the time, Ad Achshav, he said, Boli Shnos Chaim Mikoycha Shal Kotzk, Achshav Nifsa Kakesher Omehechon Esha Vachi Yishali. He said, as long as my Rebbetzin, as long as Saratzina, the daughter of the Kotzka, was alive, I was receiving strength through Kotzk. My life was coming through Kotzk. But now that she is no longer here, then where should I take my life from? Where should I take my chiyus from? And in truth, after she died, it pretty much started very, very quickly to go downhill. He began, the last few months before his patira, he began to speak a great deal about Mashiach. He began to speak about Mashiach. And we have from his son, one time that he said, he was saying that the Holy Jew of Peshitta, had said when he was the, I mean, he said that the Yid HaKadosh said that he heard the call of he heard the sound of the shofar of Mashiach. But this is already 50 years before, 60 years before, more, 7 years. He heard the call shofar of Mashiach. So the Avnei Ezer explained. He said that in the Zohar Kodesh, Nizku Shloisha Kitzim. In the Zohar, there are actually three dates given for Mashiach in the Zohar, for Mashiach's arrival. Three dates that are given in the Zohar. He says the one is in the year Tav Ches, which is 1648. Which is a very significant year, turned into a terribly tragic year. Tach v'tat, that was from the Xeris of the Bogdan Chamanuki, Yimach Shemal. All the years that the Zohar gave were very significant, but they turned out to be significant in a way that wasn't so good. So 1648, then Tuf Reish 1840, and Tuf Reish Samach Vav 1906. These were the three dates that are found in the Zohar for the coming of Mashiach. So the Avnei Ezer said, so how come he hasn't come? 1648, 1840, 1906, he was saying this 2 years after. It was 1910. 4 years later, so he says, how come Mashiach hasn't come? And the Yid HaKadosh said that he heard the shofar of Mashiach back then. So he says, Elo ha-ge'ula tzvich elias b'chol dalet oylemis. You know, according to the Kabbalists, according to the Mekubalim, all of reality, all of existence is divided into four different oylemis, four worlds. There are four dimensions of existence. Atilas, Briyatsiya, Yatsiya, Briyanasiya, the four dimensions of existence. So he said that, so the Avnei Ezer said that, Ubishloisha hakitzim hayu begimel oylemis. And those three dates of Mashiach's arrival, in fact, he says, the Gula has taken place in the three higher worlds. And those three worlds of Atilas and of Briya and Yatsiya, in fact, Gula has taken place. Avol anu hashruyim ba'olam ha'asiya, and then the shomim ha'uma. Now the Yid HaKadosh, he said, the Holy Jew of Peshitta, he was in one of those. He heard the shofar of Mashiach from one of those higher worlds, and in fact, the shofar of Mashiach was already blowing in that world. But down here in the olam ha'asiya, in the world of action, so David Nezer corrects and he said, I don't hear a thing. I don't hear anything. I don't hear the sound of the shofar at all. And he said a short time after that the Rebbe Rav Velvelish from Shetoma, the Or HaMeir from Shetoma, said that Kash Yehudi Yachzer Ben HaTfila, that's going to happen that a Jew will be coming back from Shul, but Talis Utfilin Biyodo, and he's going to be holding his Talis and Tfilin, Upist Om Yeir Einav, and then all of a sudden the eyes will open up a little bit, that is written in it from. From Yoshua Soloveitchik, it's a similar statement. A little bit different. I want to say it in the show, a little bit different. The last night of before his Estalkus, the Avnei Ezer was in tremendous state of Simcha. Before his death, he was in a tremendous state of Simcha. And the last request that he had before he died was that they should bring him the Nesivas Olam of the Maharal. To bring him one of the Maharal's Svarim, the Nesivas Olam, and he was learning the Nesiva Yisura in the section that deals with suffering. And he was learning that through the night, and then he asked for his talis and tefillin, and the Shemesh Shmuel saw that he was already beginning, the Gesisa was beginning, he was beginning the last moments before death, and the last words that the Avnei Ezer was heard to say was, in Hebrew, he said in Yiddish, he goes, Lo Acherns, I will not be delayed. That's the last thing he said, I will not be delayed. Don't worry, I'm going where I have to go, I will not be delayed. And then he was continuing silently in his Talis and Tefillin, and he was saying Shemon Esrei, it seems, because then the last thing he called out was Mekabes Nidche Amu Yisrael. He finished the bracha, but he said it out loud, Baruch Atah Hashem, Mekabes Nidche Amu Yisrael, and then he could no longer speak, and he told him to quickly take off his Tefillin, and they took off his Tefillin, he put his feet onto the bed, and he put his payas into his beard, and he washed his hands. And that's how he passed away, the 11th day of Adar Aleph in the year Tav Reish Ayin, 1910. We should be zoichet at 120 to die in such a way. It's a big schus to be able to, it's a schus to leave the world in such a way. let's start to learn something to Purim. We can start with the Tyrus, and then Mitz Hashem will for the next 2 months or so, we'll go through some. We'll go through different teachings of the Adni Nezer. This is from the first chalik, Reish Ayin Ches. Now let me just tell you the Noisa Dersha that Moshe brought over here. I left mine in school where I first started. The Noisa Dersha was not a sefer that was written by the Adni Nezer himself. The Adni Nezer did not write a sefer in Chassidus. He said his Torahs on Shabbos, and then his son recorded them after Shabbos, like is known by many of the Chassidim amongst you always have to have somebody that had a photographic memory and would write down exactly what the Rebbe said on Shabbos, and that's the way it worked in Sochetchov. The Rebbe didn't write a sefer. This sefer that we have, Nois HaDesh, was written from one of the members of the family. By the way, the family of Sochetchov goes by the family name of Borenstein. And the Shem Yishmuel, who was in his own right, is worthy of many months of discussion with the son of the Adni Nezer. The Shem Yishmuel recorded Torahs, and many of the major source that we have for the Adni Nezer Torahs are in the Shem Yishmuel. Are in the Sefer Shem Yishmuel, which we have here in the shul. We also have the Nois HaDesh actually in the shul. We have the Nois HaDesh here in the shul. The author of the Nois HaDesh, who's from the Mishpach, who's a great grandson of the Adni Nezer, what he did was is he took out from the Shem Yishmuel the parts where he quotes his father. Almost every piece the Shem Yishmuel says something from his father. So he pulls those pieces out, and he did a wonderful thing, because then he made footnotes on the bottom with cross-references to other places in the Shem Yishmuel, and where that Torah of his father is being discussed by the son. It's kemat impossible to have a real appreciation of Avni Nezer's teachings without the Shem Yishmuel's interpretation. So as we learn the Avni Nezer's pieces, we're going to also learn together with the Shem Yishmuel's interpretations for the most part. Also, there are certain kisvei yad that the... There are actual written documents that the author of the one who compiled the Nois HaDesh had access to some of the kisvei yad from the family, and there were written Torahs from the Adni Nezer, and those kisvei yad have been thoroughly checked and thoroughly documented, and he's very scientific in his presentation, and not one word is changed. And even when there's something that seemed to be a misprint of something, he would write it in brackets, and he would say that in the ksav yad, this is the way it looked to me, but it probably means the following, but it's very, very accurate. So so let's begin. You found it over there? Reish Ayin Ches? Maybe it's in the other chelik. I don't remember which chelik I took with me. Unless you have a new printing, maybe it's different from my different pages. It's different pages, maybe. Mine is around 15 years old. I don't know. I'm sorry. Okay, so Reish Ayin Ches. Shoshanas Yaakov Tzahol V'Samecha Yerosam Yachad Chelis Mordechai. Now all we're going to have time to do now is just that paragraph that's from the Adni Nezer himself. I don't know whether we'll actually be able to get to the Shem Yishmuel's explanation. So we have the piyut that we say by Kriyas Megillah of Shoshanas, the rose of Yaakov Tzahol V'Samecha, rejoicing Yerosam Yachad when they saw together Chelis Mordechai. The tchelas, the blue thread, the blue, or the tchelas of Mordechai's clothing. So the whole thing, we've been saying it since we're children, it's hard to understand what it means. So the Adni Nezer taught, I perish. The meaning of this is, Ki Shoshana Hirako. The Shoshana, a rose, means something which is soft. It's a way of describing something which is soft. And you see in the footnote, that is, it's brought Lam Netzer al Shoshanim. So Rashi says there, al Tamil Chom Shehem Rakim Kishoshanim. That the Tamil Chom are called gentle, they have a certain edelkeit, a gentleness. So the Rebbe says, Kishoshan hi Rako, that the Shoshana, the rose, is delicate, is gentle. V'chol dover rach, yicholim bekal lahatoso umakabl shinui. And anything that is gentle by nature or very delicate, it can be easily manipulated. It can be easily bent and shaped and pushed in a certain direction. That's the nature of something when it is delicate and edel. The more edel it is, the more easy it is to be pushed around.
and the more it's likely to be mekabel shinui. That's why he says v'alkei nikra shoshana miloshen shinui. That's why it's called a shoshana, a rose. It, because it means edelkeit, gentleness, and because it means something which is delicate, shoshana is from the loshen of shinui, which means changing. And therefore you see that the way the shoshana works, I mean, you could mamish watch it blossoming and growing. It's the way you see it going through all its different stages. It's about shinui. V'alkein Yisrael shehigiyu oz lamayla ha-gidolu v'kiblu ha-tor mi-chodesh mi-ahavis ha-neis adayin nisyaru pen machmas rakus libam la'at la'at yishtan ha-dor v'tiskaru ha-hava. He says the Jewish people who are described as a rose, right, kishoshana ben achochim, shoshana sa'amakim, the Jewish people are described as a rose. So at that time of Purim, they reached this very great madrega, and they were makabel the Torah, they accepted the Torah upon themselves once again. Me'ahavis aneisis, the Gemara says, right? Kimu v'kiblu ayuhudim, that the Jewish people accepted upon themselves me'ahava with love the Torah once again. So therefore, because they had just started, so the Avnei says, adayin nisyaru pen machmas rakus libam la'at la'at yishtan adov diskari ahava. It's like kivyochel to, I mean, maybe la'havdol. It's when two people have just fallen in love. And there's this tremendous, tremendous feeling of love between them. At the same time, there's a certain amount of fear that they wonder, will this last? Perhaps this love is going to become cold over the years. Perhaps it's going to change. It's going to be lost. So the Avnei Nezer says that because their love at that time was very delicate, and they were just starting once again through Purim to come to return to Hashem, Kimu v'kiblu ayudim, and Miahavas anei. So they were afraid that because of this edelkeit, because it was all new, because this love had just started, that perhaps over the years, like a shoshana, that it will change and will shrivel up and die. La'at la'at yishtan hador v'tiskar ahava, and perhaps the love will become lessened, will become diminished. So then what gave them strength, what gave them courage, what reminded them that that's not going to happen? What reassured them? Ach berosam yachad chelas Mordechai. You can say this by the Purim Sukkah. Berosam yachad chelas Mordechai. When they saw the chelas of Mordechai, umara hatchelas einu mishtana. There is no color in the world that's as permanent as the chelas. That the chelas, the simon of the chelas on the tzitzis. Which many of the mefarshim say one of the reasons, aside from all the deeper reasons, that it was chosen as the color of the tzitzis, it's also because it's not mishtana, the tchelos of the chilozim, it's a dye that's a permanent dye. So the Jews thought that perhaps our love for Hashem is just maybe it's just a fleeting feeling, maybe it's just that maybe it's an infatuation, but maybe our love for Him is not stable, is not real. But when they saw the tchelis of Mordechai, the tchelis is the opposite of the shoshana. Whereas the shoshana is delicate, the shoshana is vulnerable and given to change. And Esther, remember the gematria of Esther is shoshana. The gematria of Esther is shoshana. Because that's why the nes took place in Shushan. the teva. The rakus of Esther, the edelkeit of Esther Amalka, whose name means Shoshana, wasn't enough to reassure the Jewish people that that love that had been reawakened by Purim would be something that would be long-lasting, would be forever. But when they said, but be'oisem yachat tchelis Mordechai. So they saw the tchelis of Mordechai, umara tchelis enemishtana. V'zem misyaches levoneha shel Rachel. And that ability to remain who you are, never to change, that is a quality that's particularly connected to the children, to Rachel Imenu, and to the children of Rachel. That's why Yosef, who Yosef? That even though Yosef was a Mitzrayim, he remained, as Rashi says, in his tzidkis, in his kedusha. Yosef remained Yosef in Mitzrayim. In other words, the children of Rachel have the ability to remain who they who they are, to remain themselves, even in a place where the, where it's almost impossible not to go through certain shinuyim. Look at us. I mean, it's shinuyim. We go through a million shinuyim that we go through every day. Everybody would talk to is somebody else. And if you talk to another person, if it's a guy that's like a guy, you know, in business, a certain type of guy, then you have a certain way of talking to him. If you're talking to a child, you talk to a child a different way. If you're talking to a rav or to a rabbi, you talk a different way. It's almost impossible to keep track. The shinuyim. In one day, each one of us puts on like 20 different masks. It's very hard, you know, it's very rare to find a person who's consistent. Shinuyim. Everything's shinuyim. Changes and changes. And that's the klal of Shushan, and that's what the Jewish people fell into in Shushan. That world of Shinuyim. Shinuyim means giving in to the secular culture that you're in. Which is what is meant, that we're going to see more of the explanation from Yishem Yishmul, but that's what's meant when it says Shinuyim. What was the whole sin of Klai Yisrael? Shinuyim Yisrael, that they were enjoying the festive 180 day meal of Achashverosh. And sof kol sof, we know from Chazal that they didn't drink any stam yenim, they didn't drink non-Jewish wine, they didn't eat non-kosher food. So they went to a party. So, oh, what's so terrible? Nobody ever, there's somebody here that never went to a party. So they went to a party. And for that, there was a whole gzeira. Yeah. Well, that's the pshat. The pshat is that there is such a thing as a Jewish person that although he still holds on to the 13 ikarim, he puts talis and tefillin, she lights the Shabbos candles, and they go and they shop only, you know, in Chapin HaShemot or whatever, they buy in only the good places. Afal pichein b'yoidim adelo yada. There's not such a big difference between our home and Baruch Mordechai. It's a sad thing to say. The shinuyim that take place. And you know, it's a very subtle thing over the years. Over the years, you know, Akad Ekach, that when you or I meet a Jew, who's really the old way is authentic, we don't know, it's hard for us to know where he's coming from. The real old, authentic type of a Jew. It's hard to relate to such a person. Right? So, we're all Bali Shinui. And our Yiddishkeit is one that is we're struggling with our Shushan, with our Shoshana. Shoshanas Yaakov, the delicate rose of Yaakov, the Jewish people who believe in Hashem, nevertheless, that when they go into a certain culture, they become Chalila, almost like chameleons that take on in certain ways the mahus of that culture that they're in. So the children of Rachel Imenu, they have that koach, that wherever they are, Azoy V'Dahayim, the same way it was in the old time, that's how they are. They don't change Kihuzah. They don't change. You remember the hesped that you know that the Satmarov gave a hesped over Rabbi Aaron Kotler, it's very famous. That was a big thing, that Satmarov went to Lakewood to give a hesped. You know, it's well known that Satmar and the Satmarov had his own way, and he was very, very strong against certain things from Rabbi Aaron, but he had tremendous respect and love for him. And it's famous, they have tapes of it, that on the Satmarov said, Al Aaron Shle Shina. You remember it says in the Torah, Vayas Kain Aaron, so Rashi says, the Shvach Shle Aaron, what was the great praise? It says that Hashem told Aaron to do something. So this is, the Torah says, Vayas Kain Aaron, that Aaron did it. So Rashi, the Mefarshim is so, I mean, Hashem told him to do it, so he did. It was the Kiddush. So, Al Aaron Shle Shina. That means that Aaron didn't change even one tiny thing. So Satmarov said, look, our way is not the same way as the yeshiva world. But Al Aaron Shle Shina, he said, the rest of the yeshivas, this isn't the way it was, not in Volozhin, not in the old, they're all Americans, they're all phonies. He had it in for them. But Al Aaron Shle Shina. Rabbi Aaron Kotler, what was in Litta when he was yet in Slutsk, was this when he in Kletsk, is the same thing over here. It's the same thing. Lahagit shvach shel Aaron l'shleishina, and there are very few people like that. And maybe in a certain way you'd say that a person like that can't be successful here in America. And yet Rabbi Aaron Kotler was successful in starting in turning America around, Jews here in America, to see that there is such a thing as that there could be Torah in such a way in an advanced level, like in the whole concept of a Kol, that Rabbi Aaron brought Torah back to America. This is the Madrega, this is the Mid of the children of Roch Limeinu. Listen, Shavu, Losen Shavu, the Hebe Dabrel Yosef Yoim Yoim. And here you see that Avni Nezer says that the wife Potiphera, which means secular society, comes every day, Yoim Yoim, to seduce you, to change, right? That's what it means. The Hebe Dabrel Yosef Yom Yom. Every day, again and again. And same thing over here by Mordechai, Vayhi Ka'amr Melav Yom Yom. Right? And you know that, and the Shem Shmuel is going to explain, that the Jews in Shushan were also upset with Mordechai. Because they were claiming, according to Halacha, what are you doing? You're endangering all the Jews. There's a Pi Halacha, what does he want you to do? And you're allowed to do it. There's a whole Shaka Vitayu. Why are you endangering the Jewish people? Because he wouldn't bow down, and the Shem Shmuel is going to talk about it. No, I'm not changing. And he stood there by the Shar HaMelech. The Shemesh was going to explain, like, come below Zomi Menu. Haman, yeah, Haman, no, doesn't make a difference to me. I'm not changing. So the same way it says by the wife of Potiphar, who was trying to seduce Yosef, by Hebe Dabrel Yosef Yom Yom, every day, to chip away at one's Yiddishkeit, when you're in a place that's not a Jewish place, every day that you should become a Shoshana that's given over to Shinuyim in the city of Shushan that you're in. So the same thing by Mordechai, it says, Vehi Kamar Ve'elov Yayim Yayim. Every day, they're begging him, the Jews, the Persians, they're all saying, what are you doing? Uvasher Rosh, Mordechai Yuha Goshalahem, Sheish Bamidazu. But once the Jews saw that Mordechai has that Midah, which is what? It's called Tchelas. Berosam Shoshana Siakov. They were so terrified. We're not going to be able to hold on to our love for Hashem. We're going to change. We're not going to be able to be stable Jews. So Shoshana Siakov, they were nervous because they're like a Shoshana. But Sahalav Asamecha, when were they able to rejoice? Berosam Yachad, when they recognized the Tchelas of Mordechai. It's beautiful, no? When they recognized that, This is one of the children of Rachel, and a Geul is going to come through him. We're not holding by, but he strengthened the Jews of Shushan. He says that to let them know that the way that they're going to have a Yeshua, the way they're going to have a Geul, is not by imitating the non-Jews. It's not by becoming people of Shushan. It's not by joining them in their Sudas. But the way is by davening, by fasting, and getting the kid together in Cheder to learn. That's the way. That's what he says. Then the simcha was b'shleimus. B'roisim yachad chelas Mordechai. That the goel, the redeemer here, is Mordechai, and Mordechai is somebody that can't be budged, he can't be changed, and that to them meant that this ahava that the Jewish people have as a result of Purim is something which can't be changed. Ve'hevinu. As it says in the Megillah, they understood that these days of Purim will never ever leave, will never depart, will never go away from the Jewish people. That there'll be days that are permanent among the Jewish people.